our society today are something else. The sad thing is when that filters down to the church. And you have Christians who are even afraid to step outside and stuff. Or to be around others. Well, last week, we looked in our study of Mark's gospel at two more incidents where I like to term it where Jesus turned things inside out. People were amazed about that, and especially those who, as I said, think they had it all figured out, specifically the religious leaders and the Pharisees, religious leaders of the day. Others might have as well, because they were going along with the religious leaders. The last incident involving the disciples and Jesus on a Sabbath. This morning we're going to look at another incident which happened on a Sabbath. And this time it is a direct challenge by Jesus to those religious leaders. To the Pharisees of his day. And specifically, to their thinking, to their way of thinking. Again, that they had it all figured out. So in a way, this is also Jesus turning things inside out. Jesus issues a direct challenge. So let's set the scene. It's still early in his ministry. It's still the early part. We're not to the middle period of his ministry yet. And remember that Jesus, when he was on earth, he ministered for, I just noticed Sydney's socks there. She's like, one of my other grandsons likes to go barefooted. Little one, just love them. Anyway, they think they have it all figured out. And Jesus is saying, no, guys, you don't. Part of the thing in the church today, with many, even those outside the church, they think they've got it figured out. It's like what the Pharisees and the religious leaders of Jesus' day were doing. They put God in a box. And that's what many people want to do with God today. Is they want to put him in a box and say, God, here you are. You stay in this box. This is where we want you. And don't go beyond that. Because, God, we want you to be like this. This is how you are. And this is how we want you. And that was the way with the religious leaders of Jesus' day. That's what they thought about them. And Jesus spent, when he came to the earth, as I've said before, when you look at the first gospel, the Gospel of John, the first chapter, it tells us there that the Word became incarnate and that he came to explain. He came to exegete God to them. He came to not only show them the Father, but to explain the Father to them. And Jesus spent 3.5 years doing that. And to set the scene for this, he's still in the early part of this. But the Pharisees and religious leaders of the day are fully aware of him. They don't know who he is, per se. They know that he is a guy that's going out and about, and he's healing people, and he's casting out demons, and he's doing those sorts of things that no one had done before. Even John the Baptist didn't cast out demons or heal people. It's something that they hadn't seen before. So it's still early summer of 28 AD here. And this occurs on a different Sabbath than the one that we looked at last week. Don't know how further along it was, but it's early summer of 28 AD. So Jesus is still in the early part of his ministry. Now, if you look at Matthew chapter 12, verses 9 through 14, and Luke chapter 6, 6 through 11, those are parallel passages, and they give us a little more detail than Mark does concerning this incident. So you want to look at those as well. But now we come back to the text of Mark chapter 2. Excuse me, Mark chapter 3. And I thought I brought them up here. I can't read without my reading glasses. That wonderful age thing. Look at what it says. He entered again into a synagogue. Now, more than likely, this was the synagogue in Capernaum. It doesn't tell us, but he's in that area. He's in the area and the region of Galilee. He entered again into a synagogue, and a man was there whose hand was withered. They were watching. Always like that word they, don't you? They were watching him. If he would heal, to see. Now, to see, that's in italics, so that they're trying to make the English clearer than what the Greek says. They were watching him to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Now, notice what it says next. So that they might accuse him. So it's on the Sabbath. A man with a withered hand is there. And the text tells us, if you look at the parallel passages in Matthew and Luke, tells us that the withered hand was his right hand. Which probably the reason why they mentioned that is because that's his major hand, his predominant hand. And his hand is withered. So it's deformed in some way. But the thing of it is that what the Greek brings out is his withered hand was not caused by sin. Wasn't caused by some sort of a sin. He wasn't born with it either. It was caused by either from an accident or a disease. Now, it doesn't tell us how long the man had a withered hand. It doesn't tell us even how old he was. All the text tells us is that he's in the synagogue and his hand is withered. There's something wrong with his hand. He can't use it. His hand is such that he cannot use it. So the Pharisees know the man is there. The Pharisees know the man is there before Jesus even enters the synagogue. And we don't know why the man with the withered hand came into the synagogue. It's a Sabbath. It's a Shabbat. So it's normal for men to come into the synagogue to hear teaching, to worship. That was normal. And this does not mean, like someone to say, that the Pharisees put the man there. We must not read too much into the text. We must not be guilty of eisegesis. It doesn't say that the Pharisee put the man there. It doesn't tell us why he was there, but more than likely he's there. His hand is withered, yes, but he's there because he wants to worship. That's what they do in the synagogue. But Jesus comes in. He entered again into a synagogue. Now, why would Jesus enter into the synagogue? Jesus is entering into the synagogue, not just to worship, but he's there to teach. And they know that. As soon as Jesus entered into that synagogue, he took center place. He took control. He took command. Just as he would have done earlier. That's more than likely why this is the synagogue in Capernaum, because they would know that who Jesus is. And he would be the one that the synagogue leader would hand the scroll to and that he would teach. But notice what the Pharisees are concerned about. They're looking to see if Jesus would do anything. After all, it is a Sabbath. And we notice here is what it says. They were watching him. Now the Greek word in there, what that means is they weren't just looking around or just looking at him. The Greek word means there, they were looking at him intently. It was almost like they were staring at him. Okay, Jesus, you're here. There's a withered guy, a man here with a withered hand. What are you going to do? Are you going to do anything? Now, they don't say anything to him. Not yet. But they're watching him very intently. So what that means is that Jesus is the center of attention in that synagogue. But Jesus knows the man with the withered hand there as well. He knows he's there. I like what Barclay says about this. William Barclay in his treatise here. See, if he would do anything that's on a Sabbath, Jewish law, as Barclay brings out, the Jewish law was quite definite and detailed about this. Medical attention could only be given if a life was in danger. This man just had a withered hand. Thus, his life is not in danger. To take some examples, a woman in childbirth might be helped on the Sabbath. An affection of the throat might be treated. If a wall fell on anyone, enough might be cleared away to see whether the man was dead or alive. If he was alive, get this, if he was alive, he might be helped. If he was dead, the body had to be left there until the next day. A fracture. Say you broke your wrist, it couldn't be attended to.
The fracture could not be attended to. Now, if you sprained your hand or foot, cold water might be poured on it. You might do that. If you cut your finger, it might be bandaged. It might be bandaged, but just with a bandage. You couldn't put ointment on it. You could only bandage it. That is to say, at the most, an injury could be kept from getting worse. It must not be made better. It is extraordinarily difficult for us to grasp this. This. The best way in which we can see the strict Orthodox view of the Sabbath is to remember that a strict Jew would not even defend, now get this, would not even defend his life on a Sabbath. Remember your Old Testament history? Or even, say, between the period of Malachi and the birth of Jesus? You had the war of the Maccabees, the Maccabean War. And what it says about that is that when resistance broke out, some of the Jewish rebels took refuge in caves. The Syrian soldiers would pursue them. Josephus, the Jewish historian, tells us that they gave them the chance to surrender, and they would not do so. So they fought against them on the Sabbath day, but they would not fight. The Jews would not fight. And they burned them in the caves. And they wouldn't even stop the entrance up to the cave where they were. They refused to defend themselves on that day because they were not willing to break in upon the Sabbath. It says when Pompey, the Roman general, was besieging Jerusalem, the defenders took refuge in the temple precincts. Pompey proceeded to build a mound which would overtop them and from which he might bombard them. He knew the beliefs of the Jews, so he built it on the Sabbath day. And the Jews lifted not one hand to defend themselves or to hinder the building of that mound, although they knew that by doing so, by not doing anything, they had signed their own death warrant. So Jesus knew all that. The man's life was not in danger. He had a withered hand. So what would Jesus do? What was Jesus going to do? Look what the text says. He said to the man with the withered hand, "Get up. Come forward." So you see what the text is telling us right there is Jesus is in control. He's in command in that synagogue at the moment, at that time. He said, "Get up." So evidently, the guy with the withered hand, he's sitting down. Jesus said, "Get up. Come forward." It's like what Jesus is saying is, "You come front and center." So, I can see you and everyone else can see. Especially those who thought they had everything figured out. Those Pharisees and religious leaders. See, Jesus knew those religious leaders didn't have to say anything. He knew that they were looking, watching him and looking at him intently. He knew that they knew that he saw that guy with the withered hand, that he knew that the guy was there. And they're watching him to see if he was going to do anything on the Shabbat. So he said, "Get up. Come forward." What Jesus is saying, come to me. They want to see what I'm going to do. If I'm going to do anything. Now, he doesn't heal him directly. Jesus doesn't say, when the guy comes forward to him, he doesn't say, stretch out his hand or put out his hand or say anything and heal the guy just like that. Nope. He's not ready for that just yet. The Pharisees asked Jesus a question. And then he asked them two questions. That's why it's important to look at the parallel passages. You see, it's only Matthew. When you look at Matthew chapter 12, Matthew tells us that the Pharisees asked the question first. Look at what Matthew said. Departing from there, he went into the synagogue, and a man whose hand was withered. And they questioned the Pharisees who were watching him intently. They questioned Jesus, asking, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Is it lawful to heal on the Shabbat?" They asked Jesus directly this question so that they might accuse him. And then we see what Jesus says. Tells them that Matthew fills in for us. What man is there among you who has a sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will he not take hold of it and lift it out? Of course he would. How much more valuable then is a man than a sheep? So then it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Now before that happens, what Matthew lays out for us here. Now, people want to say, well, there we have a contradiction, because Mark doesn't tell us that the Pharisees asked the question. Well, they're not contradicting one another. Matthew, Mark, and Luke supplement one another. They're each telling it from their own viewpoint, and they have the reasons for why they are doing that. See, Mark is not concentrating on what Matthew brings out. He's concentrating on the challenge, on the direct challenge that the Lord gives to those religious leaders. So they are supplementing one another. So Jesus says what he does here, and then what he says when he asks them the question. When the Pharisees ask Jesus that question, the guy with the withered hand, he's still sitting down. But so they ask Jesus, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" Now the Pharisees knew what the law said, so did Jesus. But Jesus was not concerned about the oral law. The Pharisees, religious leaders, that's what they were all about. The oral law. You see, what Jesus is referring to, if you take your Bible and you turn to Deuteronomy chapter 30, is what Jesus is referring to. That's what he said, and why he said what he did about the sheep and the man. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 15 through 20. See, I have set before you today life and prosperity and death and adversity. And that I command you today to love the Lord your God, the Shema. And that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his way, and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and that the Lord your God may bless you in the land where you are entering to possess it. But if your heart turns away and you will not obey, but are drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall surely perish. You will not prolong days in the land where you are called the Jordan to enter and possess it. Now notice what the Lord says through Moses. What Moses is telling them. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. So choose life in order that you may live, you and your descendants. By loving the Lord your God, by obeying his voice, and by holding fast to him, for this is your life and the length of your days, that you may live in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. That's what Jesus is concerned about. That's why Jesus asked them a question before he does anything, to answer their question. Notice what he said. And he said to them, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath? It's actually two questions here, not one. To save a life or to kill? Notice what the Pharisees did. But they kept silent. They didn't answer his question, did they? But Jesus is going to answer it for him. You see, there's a lesson here for us today in dealing with people when they question us about our belief and other things. When the Pharisees or anyone else, but specifically the religious leaders, whenever they would ask Jesus a question, how did Jesus respond? He responded with questions of his own. See, they first asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? And Jesus comes back. He says, tells the man, get up, come forward. And then the guy is standing before him. All in the synagogue and the religious leaders see that. Then Jesus says to the Pharisees, you've asked me this question? He doesn't tell them, you know. They ask him a question. He doesn't directly answer it. He asked them a question. And it goes to the heart of what they're saying, of course. But what he says, is it lawful to do good or to harm on the Sabbath? To save a life or kill? They knew the answer, but they refused to answer. Why? Because it went against the way they had things figured out. It went against their oral law. See, they believed that it would be illegal, according to their oral law, for Jesus to heal them on the Sabbath. After all, it wasn't a life or death situation, was it? So that's why Jesus asked them that question. And again, as I said, that's a lesson for us today when people are asking us about our beliefs and other things. Is that when they ask us a question, instead of directly answer them, be like Jesus. Ask them a question back to get them to think. And then and see how they respond to that. That's what Jesus is doing here. Well, the Pharisees keep silent. They know the answer. But the Pharisees know, you see, they have perverted the law. They made up their own rules and regulations. Well, Jesus knows that. Even the short time he's been with them, around them, he knows that. But now notice what happens next. This is very instructive. People want to say, Jesus is meek and mild, so loving, you know, and that he never gets ruffled in that. And he would never even get ruffled today, you know. Well, he loves everybody. It's true, God is love. He does. But that doesn't mean he goes along with everything, condones everything. It doesn't mean he likes everything. Notice what happens here in Mark 3, verse 5. After looking around them with anger, who is Jesus looking at? He's not looking at all the audience in the synagogue. He's looking at the Pharisees, those religious leaders. And it says, after looking at them with anger, Jesus was angry about it. They kept silent. And after looking around them with anger, and grieved, he was grieved. That goes along with it. At their hardness of heart. That's why Jesus was angry. B.W. Johnson years ago said, what that meant was, Jesus was grieved at them of their hardness of heart, which included, and I like this, what he said, Brother Johnson said, including intellectual stupidity and insensibility of feeling. That's why they would not answer him. But now, look at how Jesus does answer them. Look what he does. He said to the man's standing right by him, and the man's in front of him. He said to the man, stretch out your hand. Stretch out that withered hand. And it's a command. Can you imagine what the guy was thinking when he was going through? He just has a withered hand. Yes, he probably wanted something done with it. And when it says here, stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out. He did what Jesus said. That's command and authority. He stretched it out, and it tells us it was healed. No more withered hand. Can you imagine what the guy was feeling? My hand's whole. He healed it. And on the Sabbath, no less. I like what Brother R.C. Foster said concerning this. Jesus had two objects in doing this. Yes, to help the man. He felt for that man with the withered hand. And to expose the false teaching of the Pharisees and to set forth the truth. Which is exactly what he did. And he stretched it out and his hand was restored. Stephen Crane puts it like this in his commentary on Mark, and I like what he says here. Jesus is never pleased with people who play religion. He is never kind to those people who play the game, who go through the motions and perform only what is expected. As Brother Crane says, Jesus never delights in people who do their duty as if that is what will save them. Remember, Jesus reserved some harsh words in scriptures, did he not, for people? Specifically, the religious leaders? Did he not call them? You're a brood of vipers! You snakes! Not only are you snakes, you're a brood of vipers! A viper was one of the most deadliest snakes around. And that's what he's calling them. He says, you're not only that, you're whitewashed tombs. You think you're clean on the outside, but on the inside, no, you're not. And then what else did he call them? He said, hypocrites. Jesus wasn't being nice when he said those things. He had some really harsh words to say to people. And I do believe Brother Crane is correct in this, in that what angers Jesus most today is people whose hearts are hard enough, even though that their hearts are hard, even though that what they are doing, they say they're doing in the name of God. Relate to that today? And some of the things that we hear and we see. Now, last of all, look at the Pharisees' reaction. The Pharisees went out, and immediately, look like Mark likes that word again, here it is, immediately, conspiring with the Herodians. Now, the Herodians were not Idumeans. The Herodians were Jews who were taking the sides of the Herods, who were working with them. They were a party within themselves. But here's the thing. What it shows here is that they went out immediately conspiring with them against him as to how they might destroy him. Remember what Jesus said? Is it better to save life? Or is it better to kill? Do you not know that Jesus knew what those religious leaders were thinking? They didn't care about saving a life. But they were thinking about killing. What this says. Did you know that the Pharisees and religious leaders hated the Herodians? They didn't like them because they didn't like the Herods? And they didn't like the Romans, but the Herodians were going along with Herod and the Romans. But they had one thing in common, you see. That's what the Pharisees, even though they hated each other, the Herodians and the Pharisees, why they did that? Because they hated Jesus more. Because he was upsetting things. So that's how they reacted. And that's how some people react toward Jesus today. They're like those Pharisees and Herodians. They may not like one another, but we'll get together. We'll get together so we can eradicate this. Do we see that in our society today? Do we not?
One last thing. Paul McReno, Brother Paul McReno brings this out. He says this is another valuable application of this text, which perhaps was not intended by Mark, and that concerns the use of silence. Silence in the face of evil is not the proper reaction. If we expect good to triumph, we should promote it in every way we can. If we expect evil to be defeated, we must fight it in every way we can. Silence in the face of evil is really the promotion of evil. And that's a good lesson for us today. What do we think the so-called wokeness and the cancel culture is all about? Brothers and sisters, it's insidious evil. Let me give you a recent example about this. Have you heard of this? Have you heard this? What happened in the courts in Finland? We're talking about the Western civilization, not Eastern Europe, but Western Europe, Finland. What happened in the Finnish courts? They were debating Christianity. And you know what they had decided in the courts in Finland? The Bible. This. The Bible is hate speech. Now, if they determine that that's what it is, what are they telling their people? You better not read this. And if you read it, it's against the law. That's what it comes down to. So what are Christians and what are people going to do in the face of that? We remain silent. If we remain silent with things of that nature, that's promoting evil. It's what it's doing. And we must not allow that. We can't have that in our lives. We cannot be that way. We have to stand up against those things. I have more to say on that later with some things that I've read and how so-called those many, I'm going to say many, but some who are calling themselves Christians, they're not only being silent, they're caving in to those who are teaching those things because they won't speak out. Not only will they not speak out, some of the things that they are saying directly opposes this. Why? Because they don't want to be canceled. But let me ask you a question. Would you rather be canceled physically? And canceled on this earth? And canceled physically? Or would you rather be canceled when Jesus comes back again? Because he's going to do some canceling, isn't he? That's what the scriptures tell us. Remember what he said? If you deny me before others, and I believe this goes along with his word too, because he's the one that gave it to us. If you deny me before others, you deny my teachings, you deny what I've said, and you deny that before others. What did he say? So I will deny you before my Father. Now, brothers and sisters, is that not canceling? You talk about the ultimate cancel? That's the ultimate cancel. And we dare not put ourselves in that place. Let's stand, we're going to sing, He Paid the Debt. He paid the debt. A debt that we owe,
But he didn't and doesn't. But he willingly paid that debt. And that's one of the reasons why we cannot be silent in the face of these things, in the face of evil.